Now, this is a really weird one for me because I'm chatting to someone who's a good friend of mine, someone who I've worked with many a year up the Radio City Tower. His name is Rick Horton, someone that we all know in Liverpool, someone who we've all listened to in Liverpool for many years. Rick has just made the move from the Tower to a brand new radio station, which I'm involved with too, In Demand Radio. And I just wanted to get him on and talk about radio. And we often hear these days, you know, radio's died, radio is over. In my opinion, it's not. It's just about to get exciting. Rick Horton, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
So how are you, mate? How's it going? You've obviously now come down from that tower that we all know in the city. How's things been going since leaving Greatest Hits Radio?
Yeah, good, you know. I think, you know, Greatest Hits has its purpose. I think it's very popular and, you know, people like it and stuff. For me, it was great. I really enjoyed my time there. But, you know, time to move on and getting back to doing local radio is a massive part of why I'm so excited, to be honest, because Greatest Hits was a national thing, even though it was sort of regionally based, but it was national. So my strength, I think, has always been talking about stuff in our area, you know, talking about that ridiculous cycle lane in Tubebrook, talking about the Strand roadworks, you know. I'll tell you what, let's go from three lanes to one lane. That'll work. you know, stuff like that, you know, which is our bread and butter, really. And I haven't been able to do that for 2 years since Radio City 2 finished. So getting back to do local radio and do it on In Demand is just fantastic. So I'm really excited about it, to be honest.
Well, we'll talk more on In Demand in a little bit, and we'll talk the future of radio in your opinion. But let's go right back to the start of your journey, because your voice has been heard for many, many years on Merseyside. Yeah. How did you get in? And tell us what it was like back in the day, Radio City and Stanley Street, when you were just beginning. How did it all start for you?
My mum and dad never listened to the radio in the house, and my dad was an advanced driver, so he thought radio in the car was a distraction. So I never really grew up with radio until about the age of 8 or 9, when I started going swimming on a Friday night with my mates and my mate's dad, Steve Parry, actually, who, strangely enough, is on the In Demand. His dad used to take us swimming in Ormskirk, and he used to have the radio on in the car, and it just fascinated me as an 8-year-old. Obviously, I was into music like most kids were, but just listening to the people who were talking between the songs just fascinated me. So from the age of 8 or 9, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And everything I did from then on in was aimed at going for that. So me and Steve Parry started a mobile disco when we were about 13. We were doing people's weddings and stuff. It was bizarre. And then from the age of 14, I managed to blag my way into Radio Merseyside, making a tea and answering the phones. Did the same at Radio City, and I was answering the phones for Pete Waterman's Saturday morning show, then, if you remember, the Hitman show. And that just led to getting a foot in the door, really. So I started as a kind of producer. I think I produced Pete Price for a little while when I was about 15. And then at 16, I got my first professional job, which was in Plymouth. So moving away from Liverpool and living by myself was weird at 16. Did that for about a year and then came back, did a bit of work at Rock FM, and then landed my dream job at Radio City in 1990, which was doing the evening show. And that was just the best of times, and did that for 4 wonderful years and really enjoyed it.
And then you left Radio City, didn't you? And you come back, and I was working there at the time when the biggest comeback of the decade, Rick Horton, returned to Radio City. It was your first time up the tower then as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was great. Actually, I've been working in the Middle East. I set radio up in Dubai in 97 and kind of flip-flopped between the Middle East and the UK for a number of years. But in 2005, I'd done 4 years in Dubai, and I got a call from our good friend Tom Hunter, who said, would you like to come back to Radio City? And that was just, it was something you don't say no to. So I came back and did drive time at Radio City for a couple of years, which was great.
Radio City, Rick, when we were there, and, you know, I was there for just going on 15 years. I left in 2013. It was just such a magical place. And radio back then, certainly while I was there and before it as well, it meant so much to people, and it was so important, and it was such an important medium locally, certainly within the city of Liverpool. that changed a little bit, in my opinion. And I don't want to diss where I used to work, because I'll always be really proud of my roots being from Radio City. But it did change dramatically, didn't it? And there is that notion now that commercial radio has kind of sold out a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, the big groups, there are two big radio groups in the UK, Global and Bauer. And Bauer are the owners of Radio City and many other stations like it across the UK. And they took the decision, after Global did, really, to network most of their content. So most of their content comes from Manchester or London or whatever. Radio City still has a great local breakfast show with our friend Leanne and Scott.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is what they call networked. And I think, you know, they took that decision for a number of reasons. I think they needed to make their business model profitable. And that was seen as a way to achieve that. I think they wanted to appeal to national agencies, so they get national advertising, so they get, you know, big clients like British Airways or Pepsi or whoever it was, to spend more money collectively than they might get through local advertising. And I think they saw that as a way to keep radio alive, almost. I mean, you speak to some people, they say, well, big stations like Radio City and others cost a lot of money to run. And to keep the business profitable, they needed to look at ways of streamlining, and that would affect programming and it would affect what you hear day to day. I think in many ways they've done a great job of making it sound as though it's still what we knew as Radio City, and I think that's a good thing. But obviously in some ways that's difficult to do, because like I was talking about, you know, moaning about the cycle lane and tube route, you can't really do that on Radio City anymore unless you're on a breakfast show. So, you know, I don't want to diss them either. You know, they've been brilliant to me. And it's just a business decision that they've made, which is kind of started quite low key. And then as Ofcom, which is the regulator, relaxed the rules, then it's increased now to the stage we're at today.
It's sad, isn't it? As someone, you're just like me, you're full of passion for that place. It's a place I will never, ever forget working at. And the mates, we've got a real firm of friends, haven't we? Like, we're all sorting out to go to Chester Races in a few months. And not just kind of our generation working there, but generations before us who worked at Radio City are still mates. And it was a magical, special, special place. So it's sad to listen to sometimes and think, that show's coming from Manchester, or that show's coming from London, or... I do think, and I can't help but think, why? You know, I get the national kind of client spend and stuff and the business decision, but I also understand that there's a real need locally for that type of content and for radio, and to bring it back would be an incredible thing. Do you think it ever will come back the way it was?
Well, I think there's a mini radio revolution going on at the moment, not just here in Liverpool, but all over the country. You know, these DAB stations are now popping up, and DAB is becoming a dominant force. You know, FM used to be the be all and end all. You know, every car radio has FM, but now every car radio has DAB, and that's been a massive game changer. And the fact that DAB licenses are a lot cheaper and more readily available, it means stations can start popping up. There's a great example in York, where their local radio station was taken over by one of the big boys. And the entire lineup of this local station, which was very popular, decided to start a DAB station. And basically, they just shifted the entire lineup on what was a really loved local station onto this new DAB platform. They've taken a bunch of local clients with them. They've got all the listeners moved over with them as well. And that's just one example of stations in the Midlands, stations in Bristol and Devon, quite a few in Yorkshire, and here on Merseyside, where new DAB stations have popped up with names that you're familiar with, and the fact that they're local. I think advertisers are really encouraged by that, and I think listeners really love it because it's like a breath of fresh air. You know, we've gone through this migration to sort of network radio over the last few years, which, like I say, was quite slow. You know, at first it was only like the evening shows that were coming from somewhere else, and then as it went on over the years, more and more stuff was getting networked. And now you've got these new stations that have popped up where everything is local. And it's like, wow, that's great.
It's brilliant to hear that. And obviously we've got a great example right now and we're both involved. And I'm not just plugging it because I am involved or because you are. I'm plugging it because it's a great, great station and the people behind it have done really well so far with what they've done in the launch of in-demand radio. Local radio is back. A little bit different to Radio City in terms of that style of music and, you know, the music genres that are played. But in-demand is really exciting, Rick, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I've known the guys behind in-demand for nearly 30 years as mates. And I think one of the wonderful things, like you mentioned, is this sort of family atmosphere that we used to have at Radio City. I think in-demand, that in-demand family is unbelievable. And it's really like a creative campus. You know, everyone involved in it, even though it's a very small team, everyone involved has a creative input. Ideas are thrown around. We've got WhatsApp groups where people are just sitting there, even at, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. Oh, drop me a pen. Midnight, 1 a.m. where they're coming up with ideas and they're sharing them with the group. And sometimes they get shut down. Other times they get embraced. And that's a lovely part of it because it's like no idea's too silly. You're told pretty quickly if it is silly. But you know, it's that whole sort of creative hub about it, which I absolutely love. And the fact that they planned it very carefully, they were testing it online for about a year before they launched on DAB last November. And since the launch, you know, we're talking what, 5-6 months. The reaction's been unbelievable. I mean, I've seen the I don't know if you have, but I've seen the data on the number of people who download the app and the number of people who listen online. It's quite incredible. And as a result, you know, you listen to In Demand now, they've got loads of local advertisers, even got some national advertisers on because they're following the strength of the popularity of the station, which is great.
It's great to see, and it's a great, great lineup and a lot of names and faces and voices that you will be familiar with as well from Liverpool. And both stations, Juice FM, where I was lucky enough to work for a few months before that sadly got taken away from us. Loads of faces and voices from Juice, but loads from Radio City over the years and some new voices as well. So if you haven't checked it out, get involved, download that In Demand Radio app and a brand new show for Rick Horton as well in the coming weeks on In Demand.
Yeah, starts 27th of March, Rick Horton's Saturday Live, which is like, I think it's a throwback to like, you remember when we used to watch Saturday Kids TV?
Yes.
Saturday morning Kids TV. So looking forward to that. And then on the Sunday, I'm doing Sunday Breakfast. It's called In Demand Decades, which is basically, the way to describe it is a core of 80s pop and dance with a bit of 70s and a bit of 90s thrown in. But basically every song is a fielded track and every song is the sort of song you'll be tapping your foot to and moving around to. And I'm really excited about that because it's something, there'll be songs there you haven't heard for absolutely ages. When you hear them, you'll be like, wow. It's a bit like if you listen to Lee Butler on In Demand on The Breakfast Show, he does a feature called Guilty Pleasures. It's a bit like that, you know, 4 hours of that sort of music. So you might hear something from Bananarama, you might hear Bell Biv DeVoe, you might hear De La Soul, you know, stuff that you'll go, wow, that's brilliant. So I'm really looking forward to that because there's so many good songs around that traditionally don't get played on the radio. And I think we can do something massive with that.
And that's kind of the model for In Demand. And I do the evening show there. And that's what I love about it. I can literally choose whatever tunes I want. And, you know, my kind of little remit for evenings is the dance throwbacks and flashbacks, the new stuff, but also those big R&B anthems that we know and love, the big indie anthems that we know and love. People want to hear the tunes they haven't heard in a while. And that's where I think radio, the bigger radio stations have got a little bit lost in terms of giving people that music difference, if you like, and rotating music and songs within the schedule a little bit too tight. That's where they seem to be going wrong. I don't know if you think the same, Rick.
Yeah, I think, you know, the bigger groups do a lot of music testing. So they test every song they play. And when the audience tells them that they love a song, they tend to play it a lot. So my kind of point of view was, if you're only testing 300 songs, and every one of them 300 songs, the audience is saying, yeah, we love that, then you're going to play just those 300 songs, you know? If you tested 1,000 songs and the audience went, yeah, we really like them, then you might play 1,000 songs, and that's where the difference is, I think.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I remember back in, you know, in the 90s when radio was a bit purer, you know, you had a head of music at a radio station that would program the music based on a gut instinct, because they were good at their musical knowledge and they kind of had a feeling for what the audience wanted, and they kind of knew that'll work in Liverpool type thing. And then when all this sort of testing came in, a little bit of the art of that was lost. So now with stations like In Demand and others that are popping up, who don't do music testing, not because, well, in some cases because they can't afford to, but mainly because they want to go down that old gut instinct route of going, you know what, if we play that, our listeners in Liverpool will absolutely love it. And I think that gut instinct is really important. And I think that's been a lost craft over the years.
It's and that is very much what In Demand does every day. So check it out. Download that In Demand radio app. Rick, what makes a good radio presenter, in your opinion? I might be sorry that I've asked this question, but what makes a good presenter? You've been doing it for many, many years across different stations. What is it?
Well, I was always told that the best radio presenter is like a mate in the pub, and I've always tried to replicate that. So, you know what it's like on Friday night, you're in the pub after work and your mates come in and you have a good old chinwag, you catch up on what you've done over the last week, you talk about what's happened in your work, you talk about your partner, you talk about money worries, you know, all those sort of things. It's a conversation, and that's what radio, I think, when radio is at its best, it's because it's a conversation. It's like talking to your mate. One thing that I used to hate was sort of people on the radio who jocked it. So, you know, people say, "Hi, I'm Rick Horton." I'm like, "What?" So I always say, you imagine walking into the pub on a Friday night and going, "Hi, Steve, I'm Rick Horton, and I'm with you till 5:30 if you're lucky. Now, what's the round?" You know, it just, you know, that's not natural. And I think the best radio is, it's like it's, you know, you're talking one-on-one to a mate, and I think that's how it works.
Okay, I'll remember all this. But it's funny, isn't it? Because we've got some great presenters. You mentioned Leanne before, for instance. Leanne, to me, is just that. She is that voice that you could be talking to in a supermarket, or in the pub, or outside the school gates with the mums or whatever. She kind of brings that, doesn't she? And there's different kind of presenters within the city of Liverpool. We've got someone like Pete Price, who used to be called a shock jock, and has got that kind of controversial way about his presenting a talk show. But then you might have a real kind of music-inspired presenter who just focuses on their genre of music, like a Pez Tellett or someone. Give us some of your favourites from over the years in Liverpool, some of the voices that we all know and that we've laughed at and we've cried with along the way. Some of the voices that you've been inspired by from the city.
Oh, well, I mean, I grew up with Radio City, like most of us did. So a big name from my listening would have been Norman Thomas, who was a lovely, lovely guy as well. Mark Jones was massive on Radio City. Paul Jordan, Neil Atkinson, God rest his soul, was a really dear friend of mine and a fantastic broadcaster, and was known, was very popular on Radio City and other stations that he worked at as well. Rick Vaughan, who was the best self-publicist you've ever met in your life. I mean, who pays for posters of himself to go round town with "Men Want to Be Him" and "Girls Want to Be With Him" on it? I mean, genius, really. Vaughan was unique, you know. Yeah. I mean, just and like
a nice guy as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, a self-publicizing whirlwind.
Kev Seed, we've got to mention, big name.
Of course, Kev. You know, me and Kev started on exactly the same day at Radio City when we started as producers. And Pete Price tells the story. He said it was Pete Price and Johnny Kennedy. And he says they were both asked to choose a producer. So Pricey went, I want Rick, he's better looking.
I've stood there myself, mate. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So, Kev was just a brilliant. I remember me and Kev were told to do like dummy shows before they would allow us to be on air in any capacity. And we spent weeks in a studio in Stanley Street just pretending to do radio shows. And the bond that me and him formed over that was fantastic. And then one of the first things we actually worked on was John O'Hara's 24-hour broadcast from the window of Marks and Spencer's in Church Street.
Wow.
And me and Kev, I think, did the entire 24 hours back at Stanley Street, doing what we call driving the desk and answering the phones. And I think from that day forth, me and Kev always knew we'd be amazing mates for life. And that continues.
I can safely say that there's not one person on this planet who makes me laugh or has made me laugh as much as Kev Seed over the years. And that laugh that he used to have, it just cracks me up every single time. And I really miss hearing that on the radio. I really do. And, Kev is a cracking fella as well off the radio. And, you know, a lovely, lovely kind of big teddy bear, I always call him. Because
I was going to say that. He's a teddy bear, Kev. Yeah. No matter where or in what circumstances you meet him, underneath there's always the teddy bear that we all know and love. That's a great description.
Someone else we got to mention was Phil Easton, sadly no longer with us. A real voice of the city, a real face of this of the city that everyone knows and love. Whether it was, I remember when Phil passed away, and I couldn't believe how many people knew him, because you take it for granted working at Radio City at the time. And my dad knew him, my aunties knew him, my sister knew him, everyone knew Phil.
I was in Dubai, I was working in Dubai, and Rossi called me and said, Phil Easton has passed away, and it really hit me for six. And then a couple of days, and it hit me for six mainly because the news was shocking, but also because I was so disconnected from Liverpool at the time. I was in Dubai, I was miles and miles away. So I couldn't sort of share in the collective grief and stuff that was going around. But I remember a couple of days later watching, I think it was the Derby. I tell you what it was. It was a Liverpool game and an Everton game. I think they were both playing on the same night. And I watched it in a bar in Dubai, because I always watch the footy because I'm a big red. And the players are wearing black armbands. And I went, why are they wearing? And I was like, oh, my God, it's for Phil. That's how massive he was on Merseyside, that both Liverpool and Everton were wearing black armbands. And I thought that was a lovely tribute.
It's funny. It was St. Patrick's Day this week. And every single St. Patrick's Day just reminds me of Phil, because you were talking earlier about driving the desk. That's how I started tech hopping, we used to call
it. When he was in Dublin.
He was in Dublin. Phil would always be in Dublin, or on the odd occasion, they'd be in the railway pub down the road in town if the boss wouldn't buy them flights. But I'd always be tech hopping. And just working with Phil in that respect, because let's be honest, some presenters have been known to be a little bit diva-ish in their manner over the years, like I'm sure it is in every single radio station. Phil was just not like that at all. And his motto was, it's only radio. And if things messed up or screwed up, you just get on with it, don't you? And that was just Phil all over, wasn't it?
Yeah, one of my best experiences in radio was when I rejoined Radio City in 2005. One of the first things I was sent off to do was the Champions League final in Istanbul, and went with Phil. And I remember Phil's excitement, because if you remember, Phil was a stadium announcer at Anfield.
Yeah.
And his excitement, like a giddy kid in a school sweet shop, was when they said to Phil, oh, by the way, when they make a substitution, you're going to have to be the English announcer in the stadium. And he couldn't believe his luck. Really? And I also remember after we'd won that amazing match, Phil had got on the pitch because he'd had a pass, and he picked up the confetti that was thrown out of the cannons when Liverpool had won, the white and red confetti. And he stuffed his pockets with his confetti. And he was so proud that he had the confetti in his pockets when we landed the next day in the UK. And I can imagine him taking them home and sort of sprinkling them on his mantelpiece. He was that proud. And it was little moments like that, you know, which sets Phil apart from the rest.
Yeah. And I think I can talk on behalf of many people at City. Just you feel lucky to have worked with him and many others as well. You know, even though me and Pete Price may have our differences from time to time, he's actually just rang me, Pete Price. It was an honour to work with Pete and learn from that type of personality. I'm sure you must have been the same when you started there, learning so much and taking so much in from these legends and these kind of real professional icons in the radio industry.
Yeah, when I was going through my phase of working at Radio Merseyside as a volunteer, you know, answering the phones as a sort of 13, 14 year old, I got to answer the phones for Billy Butler once. I think it was a Saturday. And the phones were going mental. I was scribbling down these messages, you know, and passing them through to the studio. And at the end of the show, he said, "Thanks for that, son." He said, "Just one thing." He said, "You know, when you're writing dead fast," he said, I can't make out the names that you've written down. He said, "I know you're going fast and that," he said, "but just remember this." He said, "When you mention someone's name on the radio, it doesn't just make their day, it makes their entire year. Yeah. Their family hear it, their colleagues hear it. It's a massive deal. So it's really important that you write the names down so I can read them properly." And that was one of the biggest lessons that I've ever had in radio, is just what a big deal it is for people to hear their names mentioned. And again, when we do local radio, we can do that so much more personally than you can if you're on national radio, because it means a lot more. It's a lot stronger. So that was a big, big lesson.
It's funny you say that about those mentions, because you do take them for granted, but they do mean so, so much to people. You know, I'm sure you've hosted the Peaceful Hour in the past. I've done a little stint on there and doing those mentions for people that, you know, whether it's I'm in love with Jessie, can you tell her, on the Peaceful Hour, or the Slow Jams, it was once called. So important. And that's what in-demand radio has brought back a little bit, I think, because we get so many texts for people to mention us. And so that element of radio is still alive.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it can be the smallest thing. It can be like, hello to Barry down the tyre shop, just had me car tyres fitted. You know, Barry suddenly gets the phone goes red hot. He got his mates calling him saying, "You've just been mentioned on the radio," and then he's got clients calling him. And it's a massive deal, you know. And I think being on local radio gives you much more scope for that.
Listen, mate, it's brilliant to chat. I could literally sit and talk to you all day long. What, in your opinion, does the future look like for radio? Let's just talk within Liverpool on Merseyside. What is it looking like, radio of the future?
I think the future looks really good. I think, you know, there will always be Radio City, and I think it serves a really good purpose. And I think it still continues to be one of the biggest commercial radio stations in the UK, and long may it be that. But I also think now there's room for others. In-demand does a really good job at what it does. You've got stations like Liverpool Live, which caters for a slightly older audience. But again, they're live and they're local and they're on DAB. And I think all over the country, the same sort of scenario is repeating itself. So I think as a listener, you've now got more choice, which is always a good thing. And as an advertiser, you've now got more choice as well. So you can spread your advertising budget via a few more mediums now, which is great. So I think, yeah, the future's really bright, and it's lovely at my ripe old age, you know, 31 years of doing radio, to still be involved and to be involved in my own backyard. I think it's just amazing.
Well, listen, mate, we spoke before. You mentioned about Billy Butler giving you some inspiration and other presenters. You've given me personally a lot of inspiration over the years, so thank you so much for that. Most of it was down the pub and teaching me how to drink a pint properly and stuff.
I've been asking you to go for a pint for the last 14 years.
And that's why I don't go for one, because we drink too much.
Are you in your house at the moment?
I am, yeah.
I could open my front window and shake your hand. That's how close we are.
I've moved since
then. I can't get you into the Halton Castle for love or money.
Let's do a little reunion soon, and we'll have a proper pint together. I knew he'd bring that up. He's been waiting for 47 minutes to bring that up.
I have.
But Rick Horton, we can't wait to listen on In Demand Radio, mate. Long may your reign of radio and the airwaves in Liverpool continue.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, Jay.